Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Sporting Limerick podcast. We're back after a week's absence. We couldn't afford the studio space last week, but we're back this week. Don O'Sullivan of the Limerick Post and Cian Tracy, newly appointed Irish Independent journalist, is here with us. Cian, congratulations.
Thanks very much.
You've moved on in the world since we called you freelance extraordinaire. It's obviously your appearances in the podcast, isn't it?
I haven't forgotten my roots. It's still my time for the podcast on a Thursday.
He still has six people of an entourage outside.
You can't ask him that question.
That's national journalist for you.
Yeah. He's the first ever national journalist we've had on the podcast, so in fairness to you, thanks for coming in. Didn't forget us. Right. I suppose one major event on this weekend in Limerick is the Heineken Cup, Munster against Perpignan, and all the talk at the Munster press gig yesterday was it's Cup Rugby from now on. Cian, I know you love that saying. It's Cup Rugby.
It's been Cup Rugby since a few weeks ago, and we're still hearing it, but it is. I mean, Peter O'Mahony, I think it's become his personal favourite phrase, but yeah, of course it is. It's, you know, they can't afford any more slip-ups after the defeat to Edinburgh, but with this depleted Perpignan side coming, we can't expect anything more than a win.
Bonus point?
I think so, but like myself and Don, if we talk about Peter O'Mahony's favourite phrases, myself and Don seem to have been about the Jekyll and Hyde consistencies. We're still not sure what Munster is going to turn up. I would definitely say if Munster that we know have shown up, that they've showed in fits and starts this season, if they bring their A game as such, I think they're more than capable of getting a bonus point, but
It's Jekyll and Hyde from first half to second half too, isn't it? Because that game against Cardiff, awesome in the first half and got the bonus point and stop.
Yeah, 6-3 at half time against the Dragons as well. And still went on to win the game with penalties. And Cian is right, like, I mean, what Munster's going to turn up, if you're looking at it, Perpignan, you know, French teams don't travel. It's not a stereotype, it's a fact. You know, very rare a French team comes over and does well. Huge amount of injuries, suspensions, you know, including Lafimi Maffey, former Munster player, won't be available. They're 6 points to five ahead, so even if they got a losing bonus point, I'd say they'd fancy their chances next week in France, and that's the only way it'll keep their interest in it. If Munster go out, as I think they will, and run up a score on them, as I think they should, then Perpignan would be effectively out then, because they'd be chasing a 4 point gap. They'd probably have to beat Munster without a losing bonus point the following week to bring them back in. And then, of course, the ball is in Gloucester's court with only one team coming out of this group in my own eyes. So, you know, Cup Rugby, you know, all these sound bites just get annoying after a while. You know, just say something. Say Perpignan aren't at full strength and we fully expect to win. And then answer afterwards why you didn't. You know, just be a bit more honest about it.
Yeah, I see in today's press that Perry Freshwater, former English prop who played for Perpignan, of course, for many years, he's the manager now over there, and he's come out, you know, he's kind of turned the table a bit, and he's putting all the pressure on Munster, saying that, oh, after the international break, Perpignan are depleted so many numbers that in training yesterday, they barely scraped enough together to run their drills, which of course is going to be an exaggeration, but you know, they're coming over here putting all the pressure on Munster, you know, that, and Munster obviously we know normally perform well when the backs are against the wall, but this weekend it's all eyes on Munster and expecting them to put in a good performance.
Is it a worrying time, you know, because Munster are expected to beat this Perpignan side and they haven't played well, you know, in the Heineken Cup this season. The game against Edinburgh was a complete and utter nightmare. The game against Gloucester was a bit better, but I don't think they scored a try there. No, they got two tries, wasn't it, against Gloucester, and the third right at the death, yeah, disallowed. You know, they've been struggling, hadn't scored a try last week. Fine, they got five or six, was it, the week before. But, like, is it worrying that Munster aren't scoring the tries that would lead us to expect a bonus point on Sunday? Now, bear in mind, we spoke about bonus points before the Edinburgh game too, didn't we?
Oh, we did, yeah. And that's the worry, you know, early kickoff as well. And the coaches spoke after that game and said, we've looked at everything and we need to change things, you know, ahead of early kickoffs. And I think Peter O'Mahony touched on it yesterday, saying we're training earlier all this week, you know, eating at different times just to get prepared for Sunday. They haven't been playing well. They're top of the rabbit. They're a hell of a lot better than what they were last year. But there's an undercurrent in the squad, and I'm not giving out any information that I've gotten from anybody, but I just think some of the players do not agree with this game plan still. Some of the younger players do. And then you've got a case of contract negotiations. I think 21 plus players' contracts are up for renewal, which is all happening in December. Rob Penny touched on it yesterday that he hopes to stay on, and it's always been a 3-year vision
project. Yeah,
he's coming to the end of his contract. You know, he's Simon Mannix is coming to the end of his. Ian Costello, Anthony Foley are at the end of theirs. So, you know, people were speaking during the week about Perpignan are doing a huge amount of recruiting, and that might take their eye off the ball. But Munster coaches and players know that, some of them know they won't be around Munster next year either. So,
does that not focus you though, that you have to put in the performance? 50-50, yeah.
Like, you know, does it focus you and go, look, lads, we're all in this together. It's the last season with some of us together. Are we giving this a go? Or, you know, does the player in the modern era get his eye turned by what's been put on the table by his agent? Don't forget, like, for every player that's sitting there playing for Munster every week, there's an agent going, look, France, you know, money's been offered. Matty Moore and Leinster was, you know, a target of money from France this week, and they're saying so is Conor Murray, Paul O'Connell, all those contracts with Donegal Ryan.
Donegal Ryan was in Perpignan a few weeks ago, don't forget. So, you know,
he's staying though, isn't he?
Well, Perry Freshwater again said that he doesn't expect him to sign, but I don't think there's been any confirmation that he will stay. But okay, he was seen over in Perpignan, you know, they took him over for a weekend. So Don is right, like, you know, it's strange times, I suppose. But just to go back to on the game, not the game plan as such, but I think Munster, it's strange because they've got so much talent in the back line, but they're still lacking a spark. You know, we've so many times this season we get the ball, particularly in the centres, and we're just a bit hesitant. Now, I think Lalala has been excellent. He's continued his form from the end of last season, but I think the problem is people understanding what he's going to do, because his offloads and all that are brilliant, and he's probably the only one in that backline who can do that. But too many times you see him and he goes for the offload and there's just no one on his shoulder at the right side, and I think that understanding, it's kind of strange that it's taken so long for it. But he's an excellent player that if Munster not utilise him, because they are utilising him, the problem is other players like kind of getting to grips of what he's going to do next. But I think that's the main worry that Munster fans would have, that particularly in those centre areas, that there just isn't, you know, there isn't that player who's going to go past someone. Like, we all know what Downey is going to do. Dineen came in, he did well, but, you know, it would be nice to see a bit more creative spark and invention this weekend, I think.
I heard Rob Penny yesterday at the press conference was talking about how we're coming into this relatively okay from injuries, but you look at the players that are still long-term casualties, like Keith Earls. What would he add to a backline that's, you know, talk that he might be back for the South of France next week, maybe? Well,
he could be involved this week. He played last week, played 70, got sin-binned. But like you say, you know, to go from, like, Paul O'Connell, I know, would have wanted to have played last week, and he did based on, you know, likes to have games in a row. Conor Murray coming back into a cold from international break. You know, Peter Mahoney the same, you know, took heavy knocks in that international series. But I think at some point somebody's going to have to stand up and say, look, this is a half-arsed Perpignan team. Munster should be dominating them. The worry now is that the old-school Munster have beat them up front for the first 20 minutes, tack on a few penalties, make it 9-0, get one try in the first half and get three in the second. It was almost a template of beating teams that came over soft.
French teams, yeah, exactly. In particular, yeah.
Now we have a template which is for every game, and we've spoken all year. Sometimes for 20-minute slots, it works incredibly. We got a bonus point against Edinburgh last season in the space of about, what, 4 or 5 minutes. You know, you're looking at it going, what Munster's going to turn up? What Munster's going to be put on the pitch? And Keane hits the nail on the head. Like, you know, there's so many permutations even in the front row. You know, second row, Donegal Callaghan. You know, Imo Paul O'Connell. Back row, you know, toss of a coin. Conor Murray's at 9. Keatley's at 10. And then you're going into no man's land in a sense of, do you play Earls at 13, Lawalala, do you play Downey, where's the wingers, who's going to score the tries?
What should be the team? What is the most attacking team that Munster have at their disposal? Because let's be honest, the way we're talking here, that we are expecting against a poor Perpignan side, or a depleted Perpignan side, should I say, to get a bonus point. So if you were Rob Penny this afternoon, sitting down to pick the team, bearing in mind that it's a depleted Perpignan side, what team would you pick to get those bonus point win and effectively knock him out?
Well, just based on who's available, I'll go with Kilcoyne, Varley, Botha.
You have to go with Varley, you know.
Have to go with Varley, yeah. Well, Duncan Casey looks like he's going to be the guy on the bench from Shannon. Second row is Giovanni Paula Connell and Donegal Callaghan, really, because Nagel and Foley are playing with the A team.
Billy Holland will be on the bench.
Yeah. My back row would be, I'd always like Dougal at 7, O'Mahony at 6, Standard 8. I think ball carriers just getting over the game and potentially score tries from anywhere. Three pacey lads. And then obviously Murray and Keatley. I'd play Ivan Dineen at 12. He's Casey Lowell at 13. He's in the A's, yeah. Mm. No, this is my team.
This is my team.
Smart.
This is the team he will pick to get the four tries.
Okay.
You can disagree in a minute, Keane.
No, I don't disagree. I'm just...
Ivan Dineen at 12 for me. I'd go Casey Lowell at 13. I'd have Andrew Conway on one wing.
Mm-hmm.
Earls on the other.
Right.
Jones fullback.
Okay, so who have you left out? You've
James Cronin.
Yeah, Cronin at 1. Arguably, you know, let's say Billy Holland could slot in at 2nd, or Foley or Nagel if you wanted to name one of those instead of Dunnacor Callaghan. Mm-hmm. You've left out Johnny Murphy.
Yeah, and Conway, I know this is your team, but Conway is injured. He's going to miss this week. So, yeah. I mean, you're thinking Johnny Murphy.
Dennis Hurley I've left out.
I was going to say Dennis Hurley would be another one. That
left out Duncan Williams.
James Downey.
Yeah. Left out James Downey, which is my big one.
And James Collin.
And James Collin. But for me, the James Collin decision would have been ball carrying ability, and James hasn't had a great season in my own eyes. The other thing with Downey is I'd say he must have had, and no exaggeration, about 15 carries against Gloucester for very, very little gain. I think he was very predictable. He was coming back from an injury at the time. He could be brilliant against Perpignan because they could be loose, but for me, Dineen has been outstanding, and I think, you know, to reward somebody who's played so well and hasn't really made a mistake would be the way I'd go.
You left out JJ. You have to start Keatley.
Oh, you do.
He's number one.
You do. Like, JJ is coming and he's playing very well and he's putting the pressure on Keatley, but experience at Heineken Cup level, JJ has relatively none. I think he's come on months. So you have to go with Ian.
Keen? Any major arguments?
I think I'd have Cronin ahead of Kilcoyne. I mean, we talk about rewarding players for their form. I mean, Kilcoyne hasn't been great this season, and James Cronin has taken his opportunity and been absolutely brilliant. So I think I'd start him, like, based on form. I think Don is right about Dineen. It's unfortunate, but I think we've kind of come to realise at this age that Penny does have his, not favourites, but he has his set team the way he wants to go, and Downey is definitely going to come back into that. In the back row, I would actually agree with Don's, but again, James Collin is almost certain to start, I think, at number 8. I think CJ Sander will probably be on the bench again, which is hugely disappointing, but I think O'Mahony will be 6 and probably Dougal 7 and obviously Collin 8. So that's what I'm expecting given what we've seen over the course of the season, but I've been banging on about Standard all the time on this, but I'd have him almost one of the first people on the team sheet.
It comes back to Joe Smith and probably the argument that you go with what you know best, don't you, on days when you have to win and when you have to produce performances. And is that what Rob Penny is doing? You mentioned favourites. We know it's not favourites, but is that what he's doing by going with who he knows best?
Yeah, I think so. Because we don't have, you know, that little bit of elbow room, as they call it, because at the end we're a defeat, I think not taking chances, because the players have proven this season that they're capable, but, you know, I think that is what he's doing, and it's probably worth mentioning the 2009 games against Perpignan. I mean, we only beat them at Thomond Park by a point. They outscored us 2-0. You know, it was 24 points from the boot of O'Gara that pulled us through then. Then we went to Perpignan the next weekend and beat them comfortably. So, you know, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, as depleted as they are, that they're going to come over here and, you know, roll over for us.
Pressure is off for them, isn't it? Because French team coming over, so nobody's expecting anything of it.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, that's why I think Perry Freshwater was, you know, hyping up, you know, oh, this is Munster, you know, Munster have to do this. Obviously, next weekend in Perpignan will be a completely different matter, but I still don't see them rolling over. And, you know, if Munster don't turn up, I think we will see them struggling again, but I sincerely hope that they do.
I would have a kind of a perverse view on it all, in that...
Don't you always?
Yeah. If I was the head coach, and I know I just gave the team, but if I was the head coach, there's a lot to be said, like, for trying guys at home in a safe environment. Like, I know...
Trying the likes of JJ.
Exactly. Or even trying the likes of Duncan Casey. You know... He's going to have to play at some point, because, you know, Damien Varley
isn't
going to
last 280 minutes, is
exactly.
he?
Exactly. No, He's not. So why not give Duncan Casey's Heineken Cup start against Perpignan at home? Like, the Irish rugby team for years before George Smith, and Munster rugby especially, are brutal at giving people
but
an extended, you know,
but
young
that's
players.
All very fine, Dan, until if that happens and Munster, God forbid, go on and lose the game against Perpignan at Thomond Park, people, people will say, oh, sure, took Perpignan for granted, didn't he start all those, you know?
Yeah, but you see,
that shouldn't have started.
This is the final part of that piece then, of like, the Edinburgh game was an insult to Edinburgh, how Munster took them so lightly. And you can't take people lightly in a professional setup, regardless of what player is on the pitch. You could have the entire Lions team from during the summer playing properly now at the weekend, but if they took them lightly, they'd still lose. You know, it's an attitude thing. It's not a player quality thing. Duncan Casey isn't going to take Perpignan or anyone lightly because it's his first Heineken Cup start. JJ might have done the same, you know, just to freshen it a small bit. So you have nerves in the dressing room and you have guys looking worried and really focused, whereas the potential with a samey team, as Keane was saying, you know, the same back row we always see, you know, the same centres we always see, is that the players will go, ah, sure.
Yeah.
And it happened against Edinburgh, so you can't say it won't.
I think there's a bigger issue here. Don touched on it. The fact that Mike Sherry and Damien Vardy, neither of them were involved with Ireland, you know, meant that over the course of the Rabo games that there wasn't too much rotation in at hooker. But, I mean, if you have two hookers, there's always a good chance that one player could get injured. Like, and the fact that Penny hasn't given Casey time in the Rabo, I think has to be a slight concern, because he plays week in, week out for Shannon in the IEL. He's played the British Irish and Cup. Cannot compare either of them to going into a Heineken Cup environment. The Rabo would be a step up from both, but I just find it very strange that he wasn't given, like, he hasn't played a single minute.
And he'll have to play.
He'll have to, yeah, you're right. Vardy won't last 280 minutes against a French powerhouse pack.
But Rob Penny said during the week when asked that question, he said, oh, well, you know, Damien is a warrior. There was no mention of, yes, Duncan will get his chance. Like, it's one thing I wanted to touch on. Like, keep an eye on how much time Duncan Casey gets over the two weekends. All going well for Munster, he won't get any. You've seen
the wrong
before.
Attitude.
JJ, you know, even I was tweeting about it during the Cardiff game. Bonus point secured, Liam, as you said. You know, JJ's kicking
just
up a storm.
5 minutes into the second half or something.
JJ's kicking up a storm. And young Holland's on the bench waiting for his first start, and they give him 10 minutes. Just thought it was an insult. And no matter what anyone says, oh, I'll give him time in the game. No, get him on. The only way he can learn is by playing. JJ's become a better player for the mistake he made against Edinburgh. Holland might have become a better player if Cardiff got 4 tries or 3 tries or whatever. The game was over. But they're very, very slow to introduce new people. Other teams, other countries, throw them in, see how they get on.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make. And you're absolutely right. But I think I just go back to, like, stepping up from AIL into a bruising, like, Perpignan are one, you know, the toughest packs that you'll face in the top 14 even, you know, which is saying a lot. So stepping up to that, I think, is huge. But I think Munster are blessed that Vardy is in such good form, because, you know, he blew a bit hot and cold for the last season, but he's been excellent this season. And Munster are lucky that he is in such good form. Who knows, if Sherry was fit, he might have even been first choice anyway. But Duncan Casey will feature at some stage, and he I'm sure he's more than capable of it, but just throwing him into an environment like that, I think, is a bit risky. And it could have been completely avoided even last weekend.
You mentioned the A's, they're in action Friday night, isn't it?
Playing Plymouth away, and they're back to back the British and Irish Cup, and then home to, obviously, I was the following week at home to Plymouth in Waterford.
An interesting Cian.
Yeah, the Plymouth have Declan Cusack and Paul Rowley, two Limerick men on the bench, both former Munster players. Rowley's been with Plymouth for a couple of seasons now. Cusack joined them from a Spanish club last season. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It's a pity they're not starting, but as I was saying earlier, hopefully we might see them in the return game in Waterford, because they're both too young, good players. Paul Rowley's a former Shannon player and Declan Cusack, Thomas player, so best of luck to them.
Friday night in Thomond Park, it hosts two games this weekend. Friday night in Thomond Park, the Munster Senior Cup, Gary Owen against Cork Conn, isn't it? In the the ODM Munster Cup final, am I right in saying that? As you look
next
at
week.
Me puzzled.
No,
20th.
No?
Yeah,
that's next week. Couple of weeks, right? Okay.
Gary Owen and Cork Conn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the last week of AIL before Christmas.
Sorry, yes, this is AIL and Munster Cup next week. Sorry, right. Go on. AIL this weekend. Yeah. Getting ahead of myself. Go on.
Division 1A, Gary Owen, bottom rooted to the bottom of the table, and you say they're in the Munster Senior Cup
I was
final.
Going to say it. Here I was teeing myself up for this is a welcome distraction from, but my God, they're having poor form in the AIL, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, it's struggling.
What's gone wrong?
I've seen a bit of them this season, sorry, but I've just, they don't have the player pool, and I don't see the young talent coming through that Gary Owen has been notorious for over the last few years, and also they're just struggling to compete with the Dublin clubs, the likes of UCD, who are coming up, you know, and have these academy players, and you know, it's a shame to see, but I saw them a few weeks ago against Young Munster and they just looked so poor. They went up to Ballinahinch the week later and lost again. So
lost to Lenzone last week.
Good season last season, had they?
Yeah, very good season. Yeah, just won that, actually, I think the top Limerick side, but
yeah,
won an All Ireland Cup, you know, recently. But if you look at the AIL overall, okay, without getting into fixture by fixture.
Yeah.
You look at the table now, Gary Owen rooted at the bottom of Division 1A. You know, it's not looking good for them to stay up, right? So then you're going to have three Limerick teams in 1B next year if Shannon or Gary Owen or Bowes don't get up. So you've one Limerick team left in the top tier. And the way the league's underneath are going, it's going to be flooded with Dublin and Northern teams. And people have been asking about, you know, should they make the AIL regional? It's happening, naturally. You know, Brough are bottom of their division, you know, without a win. You know, Limerick teams, the player pool is diminishing, obviously, with emigration. Also, the amount of work that goes into playing AIL rugby, you know, is massive. And then you have a huge amount of money, which the RFU claim they'll take out of the game next season. But, you know, yourself, you can't police that. There's a huge amount of money and jobs and plentiful of both in Dublin. So your Munsters, who are fourth in Division 1A, are absolutely punching way above their weight.
They brought Willie Staunton, didn't they?
They brought, yeah. Yeah. But you're right, though, there.
For the squad that they have, yeah. You know, you've got Tom Goggin, who's played already now second row 6 and 7. Dan Goggin, who's only 19, 20 years of age, is playing 13 every week. You know, you're looking at
Brian Hawk, who's a young fella.
Brian Hawk, scrum half. You know, Sean Renison's gone in there at number 8. It's the same team on the pitch nearly every week, and they had a huge pool of players under Mike Prendergast, but even this year they can't field a 20 side. You know, there's old Crescent can't field a 20 side. So the player pool is smaller and smaller and smaller, and you can see the teams coming down. You take Shannon, who, podcast exclusive, this week had a training session with former Ireland coach Eddie O'Sullivan, you know, who are putting a huge amount of work in trying to get back up to a league where both themselves and UL Bohemians struggled so badly in last year. And it's just, where are the Limerick teams going to find their balance? And it looks like 1A or 1B, 2A, which is not good for Munster, because their players have to play somewhere and they'll go out to Cork.
Does it reflect the overall, you know, we're here saying Munster are probably the third team in Ireland in terms of provinces, is that being reflected now in the clubs? Because, well, I suppose you've the Cork clubs that are still doing all right, aren't
you? Yeah, but like, you know, Cork, Conn, UCC, Dolphin, Highfield
last weekend,
yeah, wouldn't have a huge amount of players underneath, wouldn't have a massive underage structure, you know, they kind of pick and choose from each other, really, you know. But it's a numbers game, because when rugby is popular, any sport is popular, kids go play it. Heineken, 3 Heineken Cups for Leinster, kids are playing, the schools are playing, the standards are, you know, higher everywhere. And then you throw, as I said, the opportunity to work and a few quid as well to play rugby. Guys would move from all around the country to Dublin, it's like a magnet. The standard goes up again. And then you've got clubs in Limerick struggling to, obviously financially, but also to get teams on the pitch, seconds, leagues, matches being called off. There just aren't enough players down here for the amount of clubs that Limerick have.
Are we talking amalgamations maybe in the cards at some stage, or will that ever happen?
Oh, you couldn't.
I can never see it happening. It's happening at underage. It's happened at
20s. It is. Isn't it? Yeah. Like Gary Owen have joined with Old Crescent, haven't
they? Old Crescent and Young Munster at 20s level, yeah. Richmond and Thomond joined together. But I went out to a game recently just on a Sunday morning, and I think it was under 15s, there was 5 teams in one. You know, and you're just looking at going, where's this going to end, you know? Amalgamations, Liam, no, but teams will drop out of senior and go back down to the Munster Junior League and play on the Sundays. And, you know, you look at teams like St. Mary's who are, you know, have found their niche there and perform very well and have a great club and a great setup. Richmond, who've come up into the AIL this year, they're the same. It's a case of teams wanting to be a rugby club and playing in whatever division they're in. But to chase the glory of 1A and 1B, unfortunately, cost a hell of a lot of money. and it's a money game that Limerick clubs don't can't play in.
For all the doom and gloom though of the Limerick scene, it is, I think, before we finish talking about the AIL, it's worth saying that it's still such a brilliant competition though. And I know we're not going to go into about how it's supported, marketed, etc. But I was covering I was covering Young Munster versus Dolphin 2 weeks ago, and there was 8 Munster contracted players playing. I mean, a Saturday afternoon, you know, it was just absolutely brilliant. Like, I mean, Dolphin scored a try that day, which involved 3 of the Munster lads, Keane Bohan, Rory Scannell and Darren Sweetnam. And the try that they scored was just unbelievable.
I saw you tweeting about it actually. I mean, I'm
hoping that at some stage a video will come out of. They started inside their own 22 and ended up to 3 of them. And they're 3 Munster players. But it's brilliant to see that these lads, we talk about Duncan Casey, you know, not getting games in Rabba, but they still come back. And I saw JJ, as you would have a lot last season, came back down and they give it their all, like, for the AIL teams. And it's still brilliant to see that it still holds such regard for players, you know, that are trying to get to that next level. And I think that's important to say as well.
Just before we move on, because we weren't here last week and we don't want to, you know, open up old wounds and all of that, because God knows Peter O'Mahony was asked about it enough times yesterday. The Ireland-New Zealand game, Don, glorious failure. What way was it? You know,
That's actually a great way of putting it, because I was delighted Josh Smith was annoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
Too long we've had, aren't we a great little country, and aren't we the best team in the world?
We pushed them close. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And someone asked him in the post-match press conference, would you have liked the draw? And he went, we wanted to do something nobody has ever done before, and that was win. Ireland have drawn before, so a draw is worth nothing to me. And Paul O'Connell kind of looked at him, and you could almost see this growing respect within Paul O'Connell going, this is the guy I like. We were beaten. There's no point in going, Asher, weren't we great? We weren't great. We lost in the last minute, and we made so many stupid mistakes. It's our own fault. Instead of saying, All Blacks always win in the end, and we should be, you know.
It was the same against Samoa, though. I mean, his first game in charge, I mean, it was such a poor performance, but Ireland still comfortably won. And, you know, the plaudits were being handed to him and he was batting them away, you know, not good enough, you know, at this level. His first game in charge, and I think that kind of set the tone early on. And I think you're right, O'Connell, like, was kind of glaring over him, thinking, you know, that is the attitude that we've possibly been lacking in recent years.
One particular individual who normally sits across from me here at the podcast told me that it's a bit like Ireland soccer team being 3-0 up against Brazil at half time and going on losing the game. Would that be a fair equation? No? That Ireland were dominating the game after 20-odd minutes, didn't score, then only 3 points, was it, from there to the end of the game? Or
To be honest with you...
No, I don't want to get into a slagging match as to whether...
I was about to say, but permission to speak frankly, like, you can never, and I only said it when you watch Australia-Wales, you can never compare soccer with rugby, because these games are friendlies. No, but listen, let me explain. But these games are complete friendlies. And there is no way anyone will ever tell me that Ireland and Brazil in soccer, or Brazil even, cared about that a win against Ireland as much as the All Blacks cared about being a perfect season. And that's why this is so unique, and that's why this team are so good, is that this is a perfect season. They don't play meaningless friendlies. This is not just a turn up and collect the cash. This is a national pride element to it. And they just were, it was amazing to be at the game and see this team going, we are not losing here. They didn't up the jumper the ball. You know, it wasn't as if Ireland were like, oh my God, we lost because we were soft around rucks. They went left, they went right, they went up the middle, Rob Penny-esque, and absolutely battered an international quality team who were trying their guts out full 80 minutes of rugby and were perfect for the season. It was a moment of history if Ireland had won. It was also a moment of history to see arguably the best ever All Black team performing at the highest level. Now, the reason I wouldn't compare it to Brazil-Ireland is Ireland in soccer... For number one, have beaten Brazil, so there's not the undercurrent of a huge mental block. But also, those international friendlies in a tournament don't really matter.
Well, the argument was, and
they threw it away.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Bottled it. Yeah,
second. Like, you have to be cynical. Like, Ian Madigan runs out and I'm not condoning kicking anyone, but just illegally does something, and it's a penalty, and you get to reset your defensive line, then you go again. But Ireland, next time it happens, will know. And Ron O'Gara hit the nail on the head. He said, the next time we play them, we'll beat them.
Yeah, just a quick point. We're talking about press conferences and attitudes after it. I just thought listening to Steve Hansen and Richie McCaw afterwards was just... I was like transfixed on what they were actually saying, because there wasn't this kind of like joyous like celebration. It was just straight deadpan faces and just the attitude where we always knew, you know, that we were never out of this game. And I mean, you can't teach that sort of stuff. Like, it's just inherent, it's built into their psyche. And it was just unreal, like, to get an insight into this attitude of, oh, we're never beaten.
The rugby league side did it 24 hours before it in the World Cup semi-final against England, because England looked to have them beaten again, like that last second try. But if you
not
haven't
a coincidence, like, is
yeah,
it?
And if you haven't seen the first try that New Zealand got in that rugby league World Cup semi-final, oh, just watch it. It's
but just the point I was probably be clearer on the point I'm making about the soccer is that final moment of an international soccer match, if it was 3-3, it means nothing to either team in a friendly, but to this it was everything to both teams. And to like, it was like a rugby masterclass to watch Aaron Cruden playing. Like, there's a guy, you know, probably the average size of a guy you see walking down the street, not, you wouldn't look at him and go, he's an international rugby player. And to have the balls, you know, to throw a skip pass like that to a front row forward who comes in off the line, shakes loose a tackler and offloads to a winger, like, you know, it's just outstanding viewing.
You can marvel at it now, but at the time you were
no, but at the time, the minute Sexton missed a kick, I knew.
Yeah, I think that
was it. We weren't going to win it.
That kind of attitude reverberated around the press box, didn't it? Everyone knew. But I mean, just, I suppose, finally, I have a question for you on it. Before Liam, you asked us what constitutes success and failure, and I think we all agreed 2-1 would be good. I mean, we didn't.
Is it failure or so?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Can you class that as a failure after coming to
glorious
those,
defeat?
But as you said, a glorious failure is.
You can. It's a failure. I think George Schmidt would call it a failure. I think he wanted to win. He said it afterwards. We wanted to win this one. I think he targeted the All Blacks. But for me, the Wales-Australia game showed just how good that Australian team are becoming.
That was a classic game of rugby.
Yeah. Now, they came into town and everyone was saying they're a muck and they'd just beaten Italy. And when you look at it, you kind of go, yeah, they were. But the Australian team that the Lions beat and the Australian team that beat Wales, chalk and cheese, and even the way they played the game. And if you were a betting man, you would be a handy outsider for a Rugby World Cup.
Australia?
Yeah.
Interesting.
As he gets the wallet out.
With Quaid Cooper, though, yeah. I think playing as he is, because, you know,
he didn't play 10 in the Lions tour.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, his attitude and all that, if he can keep as he's going now, then I think they've got a brilliant chance. But I mean, if that goes all up in the air, I think he's their key to the success in 2015.
We'll move on. Keane, are Limerick FC gone quiet these days? Well,
we missed last week. They signed Mick Lahey from UCD, centre half. Plenty more still to come, I would imagine. But yeah, he's good, strong centre half. I'm not sure what that means for Samuel Ogie, another favourite on the podcast, because I don't think Mick Lahey, however he likes to pronounce it, will be coming down.
He's not from Tipperary,
here.
Is he?
Yeah.
But could Limerick FC include Ogie, Folan and Lahey?
Play three at the back?
Well, no, Folan isn't necessarily a centre back either. He was a full back at Newcastle, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I haven't seen him there, but I think, I don't know, I think I'm a big fan of Folan at the heart of defence. I think he's so young that I've talked about it before, that I think he could be the future, you know, of Limerick if they can keep hold of him. But yeah, I mean, possibly, but yeah, Lahey is a good centre half, and he's definitely a good addition to the team.
Tell me about Joe Gamble's big money move.
Big money move.
Are we all off to Qatar to watch Joe Gamble play?
Well, he wasn't too happy on Twitter after the club, Limerick, had come out, this is going back a few weeks now, and said that they weren't offering him a new deal, and he came out, I don't know if either of you saw it or any of the listeners saw it, slating the club, basically saying that there was never going to be a contract, that he said he's got young kids down in Cork, you know, that he was going home looking after them, that he it was too tough travelling up and down. So I mean, this
Malaysia.
The obvious move is to move to Malaysia, isn't it?
Well, the kids will be going with him, I presume.
Yeah, but I mean,
Steve Keane is the manager of this.
What
are they called? Can anyone remember? He's on big money, you know.
I'll tell you what they're not called. They're not called Vinky's Chickens anyway.
The Blackburns.
The Blackburn. Yeah, no, look, you know, fair play to him.
Yeah, exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
Much like the way the rugby is going to go now, look, the highest bidder is going to win out in the end, and wherever you can make a few quid for your family,
he's coming to the end of his career as well. And yeah. I mean, he served his time in Limerick, and he did well. But I mean, it was a shame to see it finishing on a sour note, you know, because he was a good servant to the club. But I mean, yeah, good luck to him.
Liam.
Don.
We always give out about the GA not planning things properly, and they should have big showpiece afternoons. And they do have one now, this weekend, in Mallow.
Mm-hmm.
One of the warmest places on earth. It's
can't wait, yeah.
It's fairly tropical down there.
I hope that breeze that's out there today doesn't blow on Sunday.
You have 2 months of club finals on Sunday.
Yeah.
Live on Live 95 FM.
Yeah.
Updates from one, is it?
Yeah, we'll miss I'll miss the rugby game. I'll be tuned to Live 95 FM to hear how things are going for Munster and Perpignan and see if your predictions come out for bonus point wins. But yeah, two West Limerick clubs. And I'd imagine there'll be a fine little crowd down in Mallow on Sunday. Fiona Castlemahan forced up against Keel of Kerry. Now, you know, Cork and Kerry have dominated the Munster junior football.
Of the Cork and Kerry junior clubs have been phenomenal.
They're the only ones that won it.
Yeah.
No team from outside of Cork or Kerry has won a Munster junior football final since its inception. I think this is the 9th year of it, if memory serves me right, and Cork and Kerry have won it all. So that'll tell you in itself what Fiona Castlemahan are up against on Sunday. But look, I mean, you know, you just don't know on any given day. They'll go down and champions of Limerick against champions of Kerry 9 times out of 10 in football. You're going to say there's only one winner there. But I think over the last couple of years, Limerick have had a good enough record in pushing. I mean, memory flings me back last year and 2 years ago, in fact, to Cappamore when they played the Kerry champions down in Mallow. The game was kind of over, and then Cappamore got an old goal and a few points to bring him back into the game, and Kerry boys were sweating for a few minutes, but then they went on to win it in the end. But I suppose, look, with our greatest respects, you'd probably have to say Keel probably win that. Fianna Kilmeedy, I was very impressed with their performance in the semi-final. Their fullback, here's an interesting one, their fullback Liam Murphy is getting married tomorrow, Friday, and he's going playing the match on Sunday, the Munster final, Munster club final. So there's commitment for you. That'll tell you. And yeah, I saw he had an interview with Jerome and the leader earlier this week, and it was where he said, you know, book the wedding for the 6th of December, you know, never even thinking about a Munster final 2 days later, because all anybody wants to do is win the county, and you kind of half forget until you win the county that, particularly in junior, that there's this Munster club championship. But they had a good victory down in Clare the last day, down in 6 Mile Bridge. I was at it. It was a fine, tough, physical encounter, and they came through it well, in fairness to them. They have a few lively forwards, a good full back line that was very good the day below in 6 Mile Bridge. Goalkeeper made a few fine saves and then unfortunately dropped the ball into his own net, which kept the Clare side in contention for it. I'd fancy Fianna Kilmeedy for it against Ballysaggart of Waterford. I don't think we'll win the first game. I'm hoping we'll win the second game. Look, what have we? 1, 2, 3 Munster championships to Limerick so far this year. The seniors, the minors and the Pearshig.
All hurling.
And we'll wait and see whether Fiona Castlemahan can bring a football one, or whether there's going to be another hurling one, or are we just going to have to be left with 3. Hopefully we'll have 5 come Sunday evening. Time will tell. Mallow isn't an ideal place from a commentator's point of view, because you're right in the midst of the crowd, a bit like in Innes a couple of weeks back. But looking forward to it. And look, I mean, one just never knows on any given Sunday, Dan.
I just think it's a great idea that, as you say, I know they don't plan for it, but even to have junior and intermediate interprovincial championships, it gives, like, those clubs are hopping now this week, you know, in preparation. Otherwise, not, you know, the lights will be turned off and be back into the hour went forward. You know,
and so, in fairness to the Munster Council, they always have the last calendar games that they have from their schedule for the year is the Munster Junior Hurling and Football Finals in Mallow. It's become a permanent fixture now. Double header in or around the 8th of December, this particular weekend, the Sunday afternoon, double header in Mallow. They turn on the lights for the second game and everybody goes away knowing, you know what, it's been a good year for, and I think it's been a good enough year for Limerick GAA, controversy apart.
Yeah, I know. That's the final part of the podcast, is to ask you about controversy. We missed last week.
Controversy? I don't know anything. I was in the holidays last week.
We missed last week, but there was a special convening of a county board and delegates were asking a question of why, am I right in saying Tom Ryan was originally liaison officer with one team, 21s?
He's a selector with him.
Selector. So he's a selector with the 21s and they wanted to appoint him the intermediate hurling manager, which in this county is seen as an under kind of 23 group of players to get extra experience for guys out of minor and not good enough for the senior panel. So why isn't Tom Ryan the intermediate hurling manager, Liam?
I don't know, because the executive of Limerick County Board haven't put a 100% concrete reason as to why they blocked him. And let's remember, it was the same five-man committee that picked the under-21 management that was to pick the intermediate management, and that's a separate five-man committee to the one that picked the senior management. So, to me it seems... Delegates found their voice last Thursday night at this specially convened county board meeting. And while it's a serious enough issue, you know, and maybe it's an issue that they feel, look, here's where the county board are telling us what to do. We ultimately have the power, and they tried to force through the Tom Ryan appointment last Thursday night. I just wonder why it's taken them so long to find their voice. There's been plenty of other issues through the year where they could have been more vocal on, and you know,
but there's two questions on that though. One is there an alternative offered for manager of the under 21 team?
Well, the under 21s
are intermediate. Has there been an alternative offered?
No, you see, basically this five man committee came to the management meeting
With Tom Ryan's name.
And the management said, okay, we'll accept the under 21s and Tom is a selector with that, that's fine, but Tom isn't going to be the next Limerick intermediate hurling manager. What they did then was they saw permission from the delegates last Thursday night for a new committee to be appointed of the chairman, the secretary and the treasurer of the county board to go and find a new intermediate hurling manager, which was shot down like the clappers. So
who were the two that missed out?
So the delegates from the floor were then trying to push through Tom Ryan's appointment as intermediate manager and demanding to know why it didn't come before them to vote on it. It wasn't on the agenda, the intermediate management. There was no any other business and things got hot and bothered and last Thursday night. And the upshot of it all is there's to be another meeting. We believe now it's going to be next week where they're going to come back with a name. Their chairman, secretary and treasurer are now gone to speak to the five-man committee to see, is this the only name you're putting forward? And look.
But my second question was, the delegates finding their voice, is that based on that Tom Ryan is probably one of the biggest characters in Limerick GAA history that splits opinion?
I don't know whether it's...
Would they have fought if it was Liam Ahern's name on the ballot? Would they have just gone grand?
I don't know. Is it a case of they've just gone, look, you've pushed us so far all bloody year and this is the straw that broke the camel's back and we're going to stand up regardless of who's going to be named as intermediate manager and say, hang on, you've been dictating to us all year, you're not going to dictate to us in this? Or is it just the Tom Ryan factor? I don't know. Genuinely don't know. I don't know. Like, to me, the bigger debate should be, do we need an intermediate team? You know? Like,
and open worms everywhere.
No, but do we? Absolutely. Why do we need
an intermediate guys playing, the more guys playing hurling and getting the opportunity to play at that level. You asked Donal O'Grady, do we need an intermediate team? Sure, he missed out.
He came through,
So even if you get a captain of a Munster Senior Hurling Championship winning team, it's worth having.
But the dynamic of hurling has changed now. You know, you're not going to find a 24 or 25 year old that's going to burst onto an inter-county panel. They're going to be very, very rare.
Yes, but I do say that with the warning of, look at rugby's example, that if you're not in an academy at 18, you're lost to the game, and look what rugby's done. It's becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. The GAA have always had an ability to obviously be in parochial and have everyone have a team in every parish. That they've now gone into amalgamation. These guys need to see some kind of reward.
But you
otherwise
see,
they're going to stop playing. If you're not in the county team, you could be on the intermediate.
You have a far better structure now at underage. In all counties.
But you're making the number smaller.
You are, but at that said, if you're not shining through at minor and 21, which is where it stops, like, you will find it, you won't find any 22, 23 year old bursting out of the blue, really. to burst onto an inter-county senior hurling panel. And if
you're
definitely
not, won't find them if you've no intermediate team.
Well, I don't think you'll find them anyway. That's my argument. You know, like all this hullabaloo for five games, and that's a max five competitive championship games. Like, there was no debate about the senior hurling management. There was no debate about a minor hurling management. There was no debate about, you
know, drawn to football.
Yeah. There was none of that for what could be 3, 4, 5 and a far more longer span. This is five competitive games max. It could only be one competitive game if you lose.
You know now as much as anyone that, you know, revenue plays a factor here. And would you be looking for the senior panelists to be extended? Because, like, at the moment they'll only feed 30, and God forbid anyone else looks to be fed or wants to train with the senior panel, he's not getting his dinner, he's not getting any gear, like. So you saying they should carry maybe 40, 45 on a senior panel?
Well, that would be my argument, and that way then, because you're always going to have fellas missing through college and all that. Yeah. So from that point of view, I think you'd be better with an extended senior hurling panel and...
Always have 30 training.
Yeah. But then you're saying, oh, fellas aren't getting games. But they're not getting games with the intermediate as well. The intermediate side play competitive games just on the same day as the senior hurlers play. You know?
Mm.
That's the first round of the Munster Intermediate Hurling Championship is the same day as the Senior Hurling Championship down in Thurles next year.
No league.
No league. Nothing. So, you know, I don't buy into the argument that, oh, it helps produce on players. Yeah, they're training away, but sure, why don't they train with the senior hurlers and get the experience of that as opposed to training away themselves? Maybe with the 21s is probably what's going to happen. And what you'll eventually see is the vast bulk of the under-21s that aren't part of the Limerick Senior Hurling Panel will inevitably become the Limerick Intermediate Hurling Panel, anyway. You know? I can see the logic behind, if they're keeping the intermediate hurling team, I can see the logic behind having somebody that's a part of the 21 management as the manager of the intermediate team. I completely agree with that. And
So you want Tam Ryan in there straight away? As soon as possible.
I don't mind who becomes intermediate manager, but I would just prefer to see a debate on junior football and intermediate hurling teams, whether or not they're needed and whether their role, given the current situation, you know, the way they've changed down through the years and the way the league is changing, the way the GAA is changing, whether there's a need for them. You know, everybody's talking about costs, and how to cut costs could be one way of, you know, reducing it. Could be wrong.
Fair enough.
I probably am wrong. There's probably plenty of people out there now roaring at their devices.
To finish this week's podcast, are we saying guaranteed Cian Tracy of the Irish Independent, nailed on, bonus point win for Munster?
No.
And anything outside of that will be back page news.
And I noticed the way you said, oh, I'll be checking out your predictions from Mallow for your bonus point wins. I'm not saying that Munster are going to get a bonus point win at all.
Right, okay.
No.
Oh, sorry.
I wouldn't be... I don't think Munster will get a bonus point. I think they'll win, but I don't think they'll get a bonus point. There's my
Do they need a bonus point?
Yes.
Well, it would be nice.
I think they're going to need one possibly. For Gloucester result in the last day.
Possibly. But I wouldn't be...
I'm standing here now, if they don't get one, the hard questions will be asked afterwards.
Donal Sullivan, 1 second, Limerick Post out. Is
in the
what?
Press in the press conference, hard questions will be asked if they don't beat this Gloucester, a property down team, by a bonus point.
Do you think so?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about time we expected a little bit more from our players. Much like Joe Schmidt with Ireland.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And
you should
be
beating up a half-arsed French team. You should be beating them up a hoop.
Like. I think that's fair enough expectations, but I'm not quite sure. I don't think this Perpignan team are going to roll over.
We shall wait and see. Hopefully a successful day on Sunday with 3 victories going the way we want them to go. Busy day for us on Sunday. Looking forward to it. Don, as always, thanks for being so forthright with your opinions. Keane, congratulations on the appointment. Don't forget us when you're on the way up, like, you know. Well, he's on the way up now, isn't he?
He's
Donaldson?
Gone, really.
He's gone, yeah.
Here,
yeah.
This is contractual. It's the only reason he was here.
That's it, yeah. He had one last podcast to do with the year. And
No.
We'll never see him
again. I don't forget my roots.
The engine's taken over in the limo.
We'll never see him again. Keane, thanks for coming in. Don Cheers. As well. And we'll talk to you. I presume we'll have a podcast next week before... we got to the south of France. Yeah,
absolutely.
The Stade M. Giral. Until then, hopefully we're talking of bonus point win, Don, and the hard questions won't be asked. Talk to you next week.